Welcome, 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 everybody, to the Hockey Think Tank podcast brought to you by thehockeythinktank.com, a website for all players, parents, and coaches to go for a little bit of education and a little bit of inspiration regarding the greatest game on the planet. What an episode we have for you all today. We have a current NCAA hockey player in the captain of the Penn State Nittany Lions, Chase Berger, coming on the podcast to talk about his hockey journey. He actually works out with Jeff during the summers and has had a pretty successful hockey career. Obviously, now being at Penn State, he's won a championship. He's the captain. So a lot of great insight from somebody that's going through it right now. But before we get over to Chase, let's get over to my partner, Jeff Lavecchio, down in St. Louis. Jeff, what's happening today?
Not much. The sun is almost shining, and I just crushed a protein and greens shake, so I'm feeling good.
I had a protein and greens shake this morning, too.
Yeah? What was in it? What'd you do? Tell me. Let's hear it.
It's like always the same. It's strawberries, bananas, spinach, and some either almond milk or coconut milk.
I'll take that. Where's the protein, though?
It is in the chicken that I ate after for breakfast.
Throw some protein in there. It'll satiate you. Your muscles need protein. And throw some frozen peas in there too. I don't know what it is about frozen peas, but when I have frozen peas in my smoothies twice a day, literally my body fat, I can tell a difference. Like, I swear to God, I don't know what it is, but, and I tell, all my guys this, I don't know if it's just like the way that my body breaks down peas or what, but when I have peas twice a day in my smoothies, like literally I can look and see my abs better. Like, I know that that's like coming from like a aesthetics thing, but like when you're playing pro hockey, you get body fat tested and you get all that stuff. So like, I don't know what it is, but it makes a difference. I see you laughing. Take it easy.
There's just so many places we could go with what you're talking about, but well, let's get it over to Chase. And enough about body fat and peas and all that kind of stuff.
Hey, easy, all right. Body fat. Everyone gets tested body fat beginning of the year, so there's guys who come in chubby. I'm just trying to give those chubby guys or chubby girls or chubby kids out there some ideas on how to help with their body fat. Chase Berger listens to me. He looks like a human Ken doll. I think it's working. Okay.
Gotcha. Okay. Chase Berger, let's get to him anyway, though. He's one of your favorite people in the world, and he was awesome on the podcast. I thought it was really cool to be able to get somebody on the podcast that's, you know, playing college hockey right now. And, you know, thanks to the coaches and the sports information people at Penn State for allowing Chase to come on and kind of share his story. But must have been pretty cool just to kind of rehash some things and kind of go over his journey, huh?
Yeah, totally. And I mean, he's everything that we talk about. When we've had Adam Nicholas on, and he said, the quote unquote late bloomer is actually the normal bloomer. And these 18-year-old, 20-year-old phenoms, like, they're phenoms for a reason. That's not normal. Chase didn't go straight out of high school to playing D1. Like, he went and played 2 years of juniors, and, you know, he's an older senior in college. He could have left for pro multiple times, decided to stay to get his degree. And he's the captain of Penn State. He's one of the best players, best people I know, best guys in my whole company. I couldn't be more happy for somebody to be successful. And, we talked about a lot of cool things on this about, you know, taking that slower road. You know, he had the opportunity to leave for juniors earlier, and he decided to stay because he didn't think it was right for him. Obviously it worked. It was the right decision, you know. And then we talked about some new ways of thinking that his coach employs with Penn State that I think are just phenomenal ideas. I mean, I don't know how people are going to take these, you know, with all the old school thinkers out there, but very cool stuff on this podcast episode from start to finish. I'm really glad that he took the time. He's in college. He had to wake up early for this.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. So, I mean, I originally texted him like, hey, can you do like 8:45? And he's like, hey man, give me till 9:15. Let me get up. let me brew a pot of coffee. Let me get the brain going before I got to talk. So we gave him that extra half an hour, and I think it worked. He's a phenomenal speaker.
Yeah, no, he's great. I mean, there's a reason why he's the captain of one of the top programs in the country right now, and they've gotten to be one of the top programs in the country real quick. You know, that's just a testament to kind of what they've been doing. And it was really good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully, he's had quite a few. He's been to an NHL development camp, every summer since he's been in college. So whoever is going to sign this guy at the end of the year, you know, I'm hoping and I'm sure he's going to get signed by an NHL team. You are getting an unbelievable hockey player and an even better person. Like, he's the kind of guy, like, if I'm a coach, I'm looking at him and I'm like, you're my captain. And I'm not even saying that because I know him or because I train him. Like, looking at it objectively, he's the kind of guy you want to be your captain. I mean, he's all about the team. He's all about winning. He's all about the boys, and he's all about self-betterment. Since I've known him probably 15 years, you know, since he was younger, I'd come back and skate with him. And he was always the guy who I was like, this kid's going to give himself a shot because of the way he handled himself off the ice. And the way on the ice, he's always trying to get better. He's always giving it everything he can. You know, when he first started in college and we'd have coffee, he'd be like, well, we're doing this. What do you think about this? Or how can I make this better? Not only in the gym, on the ice, everything, nutritionally. Like, he's always looking for that extra little edge. And he's the kind of guy that we go after with this podcast. People who want information to get better. Whether it's you get an inch better today and an inch better tomorrow and you build those blocks, you know, with all these people we bring on, these are the people we're going after. So younger kids, you're listening, model yourself after a Chase Berger. Listen to what he's saying because he is doing it right and he's gotten better every day, every year. Yeah, I just can't say enough about the guy.
Yeah, I mean, it just goes to show you, man, development is a marathon. It's not a race. And he's living proof of that. And, you know, he was a lot of fun to talk to. Pretty funny, too. He's got to be a pretty funny kid. You guys have a nice little back and forth going with each other.
You don't even know. He wasn't even getting it going either, too. Because I'm sure he's trying, you know, be professional. But, you know, I mean, his brother, like Jack, the kid who went to Princeton, like, guy could also be a model. He's like 6'2", 220, monster. I'm pretty sure he was going to Johns Hopkins or some sick medical school. And he just one day was like, you know what? I'm going to do something else. And like he pivoted and now he's in like the finance game, I think. Like the whole family is just a bunch of geniuses on top of genetic freaks. And, you know, he has every reason in the world to be cocky and he's not at all. He's just the best dude. And, you know, we give each other a lot of crap back and forth, but it's all from love.
Yeah, no, it's that's awesome. And before we do get over to Chase, again, we want to thank everybody for listening to the podcast and for rating and reviewing and all that kind of stuff on Apple Podcasts and on iTunes. You know, those reviews mean a lot to us, gives us some more information of what you guys want to talk about. And Jeff, I know you got something you want to say here too.
I just was motioning to Topher that he sent me a screenshot the other day. We're over 50,000 downloads now, so very, very, very cool. You know, I just want to say thank you again to everybody. I know we always say that, but you know, the last 2 years of my life been kind of hard personally and professionally, deciding to retire and stuff like that. And this podcast, it gives me a purpose and I love helping people. I love getting to talk to Toph, getting to hang out with him every day for a couple hours while we do this. So I can't thank you enough. And we're just trying to help you guys find ways to get better and bring on people that we know will help you. So thank you so much for listening. Like, we hit 50. That was one of my first goals. My first goal was 10, then it was 50. I mean, I want to get this thing to 100,000. Like, let's go.
Let's go. And with that, let's go over to Chase Berger, captain and senior of Penn State Division I hockey. We are so excited to have on this episode of the podcast the captain of the Penn State Nittany Lions this year, Chase Berger. Chase, what's going on today, brother?
Not much. Thanks for having me on.
No, thanks for coming on. And Jeff, Chase, you work out with him in the summers, and you guys have a great relationship, so I think he's going to ask quite a few of the questions here today. But before we kind of get into that, just wanted to kind of ask you, growing up in St. Louis, you are one of how many brothers do you have?
I have four. I have two older and two younger.
All right, so five boys inside the house. Do you guys have any sisters as well, or no?
No, two girl dogs.
Hey, these guys are all monsters too, Toph. Like, these are not small human beings. These are jacked diesel model looking human beings. I don't know what they're eating or drinking in the burger household, but it's working.
Maybe they're eating a lot of burgers in the burger household. Hey-o.
No, that was bad.
Yeah, we're gonna have to. I'm gonna say I'm gonna edit it out, but I'm gonna leave it in there just to sound like an idiot. But
not allowed.
But talk to us a little bit about growing up in St. Louis with five boys in the household, and I know at least a few of your brothers played hockey. How did you kind of get into the sport, and what was it like growing up in that kind of house?
Yeah, it was chaos, to be honest. But I kind of got started playing hockey because my dad he played growing up. And he kind of threw us all in skates before we kind of had a choice. My brother ended up playing Division I at Princeton. So obviously I kind of was able to watch him, develop, and he kind of created a little path for me. And then I think as far as growing up in a house full of hockey players, like there was always somebody to play with. So, we were playing roller hockey all the time or playing hockey in the basement. And so I was just kind of consumed by hockey my whole life. And then as far as just being in St. Louis, I think it was great, going out to like summer skates or whatnot. And you got guys like Jeff coming out, going a million miles an hour, scaring everybody. And so there's a bunch of, St. Louis wasn't a crazy huge hockey market as far as when I was growing up. So, the guys that were pro were coming back and giving back, and you're skating with them. You got Jeff out there. I remember one time he got high-sticked in the face, and I thought the kid who hit him, Brendan Wilson, was never going to touch the ice again. It was hilarious.
Tolf, that's a hilarious story. So I come back, and it was probably like the year after my back concussion. I might have played 1 year pro after that, and I was going to a concert like right after this skate, and I always tried to come and skate with these guys just to like teach them things or whatever. My old coach was their coach, and kid goes to lift my stick, and obviously I dangle him with my sick hands, a stick right, like he almost got me in the eye. It was like a quarter of an inch away from my eye, and I immediately start leaking everywhere, like blood. I think I wound up with 7 stitches. I think I broke my stick on the boards in half, and then I continued to whack it against the boards until it was in like 15 pieces. I threw it down the ice, skated off the ice, had to go find somebody who knew how to stitch so I didn't miss my concert, but I still made the concert. Not a big deal. But anyway,
I've never seen a kid get undressed so fast in the locker room. Talking about Brendan, after practice, he was out of there in 12 seconds.
Oh my God. Too far. I reached out and I said, sorry. I mean, I didn't hit him. I just hit the boards. But anyways, Bergs, I got to ask, because you're a mentally tough human. I mean, one of the most mentally tough, dialed in guys I've trained. Did you, having that many brothers growing up playing hockey in the same household, like, did you learn to battle? Did you guys like wrestle and fist fight each other and stuff like that? Because I never had a brother, and I feel like everyone I know that has brothers are like naturally just way tougher. What are your thoughts on that? Because Jack, your brother who played at Princeton, Tolf, I don't know if you remember him. This guy is a unit. He's got to be like.
Oh, I remember coaching against him. Yeah, he was a
6'4". 225 yeah. And skates like wind. Like he is a diesel truck. So
yeah, he might have been too big. He was enormous. But I do think there's some merit to that, Jeff. Obviously, when we're playing and like shinny hacker or whatever, when you got two older brothers, like it doesn't matter what you do, like you're gonna lose the fight. So like obviously you kind of got to get used to that, and I think you kind of learn to lick your wounds. And then obviously you got the two younger brothers where if you need to take it out on somebody, you got that. But, I think we're always battling it. And even if it's not hockey, I remember playing football with my older brother, and you know how it is. Well, I guess you don't have a brother. So, but you always want to play with your older brother and his friends, but usually they don't want you to play. So your mom has to say, hey, Jack, like you need to let him play. Like you're at our house. So they don't want you out there at all. So I remember one time we were playing football in my backyard, and I was like 8, and my brothers, like, they were too old. They were like 15. And, they're somewhere around there. And I was out there and everyone was just murdering me. But I was like, I wanted to play with these guys. Like I'm not backing down now. So I remember I was going full speed, and we had this massive bush in our backyard. And one of my brother's friends comes and just absolutely buries me into it. Stitches in my face is terrible, but you don't want to say, you know, I don't want to play anymore. So you just kind of learn to deal with it.
That's awesome. I love that. Unreal. I mean, 8 against 15, that's a pretty big age difference. But I mean, that's probably, you know, I got to think that's where you got your competitive nature, because like you're such a hard worker and an honest player, an honest person, honest in the gym, all those things. Like, I got to think that kind of environment helped shape you being around brothers like that and always having to battle for your space.
Yeah. I would think so.
No, that's awesome, man. And, you know, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your kind of youth hockey career too, growing up in St. Louis, kind of in terms of the mentors that you had kind of growing up. You know, you had at that point guys like Jeff and Paul Stastny and Sean Muncy, who we've had in the podcast, you know, already have gone on to play college hockey and you know, play in the pros and stuff like that. Like, how much did you guys look up to that kind of first crop of guys that are around Jeff's age? And how much did that kind of give you guys confidence going through youth hockey to say, hey, like, I can play college hockey and hey, I can make it to where I want to go?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, growing up, at least when I was littler, I didn't play AAA. I played for the Rockets, and so I didn't even know about those guys. So I honestly had no idea that anyone really from St. Louis had played Division I hockey. So I never really thought that was going to be a route for me. I just kind of tried to like make the next level, and I always kind of thought maybe I could play Division III. But then, you know, as I came up into midget and started kind of learning more about, you know, guys like Jeff, and I know Chris Weidman was a pretty big deal when I was growing up. And those guys are coming back for the summer skates. And so you're seeing them. And it's like, well, these guys are playing Division I. Like, they're coming back. They're playing with us. You know, I remember Jeff was always trying to teach us stuff about the next level. So I think once I came of age of really knowing about, you know, the possibilities of first St. Louis kid and seeing these other guys come back who had done it, it really kind of opened my eyes to, hey, there might be a chance here. But, you know, all of them kind of harp the same thing. Like, there's a lot of really good players. Like, if you want to get to the next level, you just got to kind of outwork everybody. And so I thought those guys did a really good job of being honest with, you know, us as kids and what we had to do to make it to the next level, and obviously set a great example for us.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And you also obviously had a really good example in the fact that your brother went on to play at Princeton. What was that like, kind of seeing your older brother, who, you know, you did have those fights with on the football field in the backyard and stuff, you know, go through that process of, you know, playing junior hockey and then going on to a school like Princeton to get an education and play Division I? Was that something that inspired you as well?
Yeah, it definitely inspired me. You know, honestly, I didn't realize he's a pretty, he's a reserved guy. He's quiet and he doesn't really show frustration very much. So I didn't realize how hard it is, you know, especially playing junior. I think playing junior hockey is really hard. I mean, you become a man really quick. You realize that, you know, it's a little bit of a business. It's, you know, it's not like, hey, I'm going to play every game. I'm this, you know, I'm a great player, yada, yada. It's like, hey, if you're not playing, you're not playing. So, you know, I don't think he really ever showed that. So when I showed up to play junior and I think we had 35 kids show up to my main camp, like, the first week, I forget what it's called in the USHL, but, and then we cut like 12 guys and everyone thought they were on the team. So I was thinking, hey, I'm on this team, like, yada, yada, yada. But I didn't play well in the preseason. I was getting cut and I didn't know where I was going to go. So, I think in that regard, he was really good at staying, you know, positive and focused the whole time. But you know, to me, it was kind of eye-opening when I got to junior and you realize just how hard it's going to be.
Yeah. That's crazy. Like, and your brother, he was a very good player, especially at his role. Like, he wasn't a massive goal scorer by any means, but I mean, did he go to an NHL development camp like every summer when he was in college? Because I'm pretty sure he went to at least two, right?
Yeah, he went to New Jersey's and Ottawa's. I mean, he's just, right, as you know, Jeff, he's so big. Like, I think he had, you know, obviously a lot of potential there.
Yeah, I mean, man, he could skate, he could shoot, he was diesel. Like, I for sure thought, okay, this guy's going to give himself a chance with like just his intangibles. So, but I like what you just said about going to the USHL and thinking you're on the team, and you get there and they got to make 12 cuts. You know, that's not something that was around when Toph and I were playing in the USHL. That wasn't a thing. It was like, you made the team out of camp. Maybe one or two guys would get cut in the preseason, but it wasn't like they were carrying 10, 12 extra guys. So I would love to hear kind of more about learning about that and the difference between how you prepared going into your first year in the USHL, where you thought, hey, I'm on the team right away. And then maybe the second year where you're going in and you're knowing, hey, there's going to be 10, 12 cuts here. Like, I got to get my shit together.
Yeah. So I guess my first year, we had like 35 guys at camp, and obviously ended up cutting 12, but also we weren't very good my first year. So of the like 35 or whatever guys that showed up day one with me in Kearney, Nebraska, for Tri-City, we had 7 guys still on the roster at the end of the year. So we had all these new guys made a ton of trades. So it was like, so going into the next year, we had a new coach, who was, he's a really, really smart guy, Jim Holton, but he was a hard ass. And this guy, he was scary. He was really scary. So I know, you know, coming into even open camp or whatever it is in July, like even all the veterans on the team, like we're like, we don't even know if we're going to have a spot. Like this guy literally told guys, hey, I'm every spot is open. Like anybody can get cut here. We cut like 3 of those returners. One of them, the goalie for Michigan right now, Hayden Levine. We cut him like going into camp. So, going into the next year, I think it was, you know, hey, I got to earn every inch of ice, you know, every shift. And then obviously I took that mentality and showing up for preseason, I wanted to be in really good shape. So got there a couple weeks early, wanted to be in great shape. And then also just every practice, I tried to really just like, it was like a game, every practice. You know, we're all showing up and we're just trying to battle for our spot and our ice time, which, you know, showing up my first year, I'm like, I'm on the team, you know, I'm great. You know, there's no way I'm going to get cut, yada, yada, yada. And then the next year it's like, I kind of got that 13th forward mentality where, you know, if you don't have a good Tuesday practice, you might not be playing Friday. So I guess that's a different attitude that I brought, that I still like to try to have today.
That's unreal. And I just want to reiterate that because that number is astounding. Parents and players listening, 35 guys at the beginning of the year, and by the end of the year, only 7 remained. Toph, Cornell guy, can you crunch those numbers? How many guys got cut or traded throughout the year?
Well, that's actually, that's an easy one because it's kind of like football numbers, 35 and 7. So 28. 28 guys that were there at the beginning of the year did not end up on the team at the end of the year. That's insane.
That's crazy, but I mean, it can happen. And like Toph and I always talk about on this thing, when you get to juniors, it becomes a business. It's the coach's livelihood. That's how he puts food on the table for his family. So if you're a player who's going into juniors, your first year, second year, whatever, you have to know it is now serious, serious business. 28 guys got cut or traded on Chase's team his first year. 20, that's more than a whole team. That's insane. But that's what happens. So that's what you need to know going in, and you have to prepare. You have to prepare every day. Like, hey, if I don't give it my best, I could be cut. I need to go into camp and impress them, be in the best shape ever, be the best me, bring whatever my game is. I need to bring that every day. That's how important it is in junior hockey. That's, I can't even believe that number, Bergs. That is insane.
It's well, and honestly, maybe the craziest part is, so all those guys got cut, but so did our coach. So you know why I did it, but our coach had his baby on Saturday. This is in like, I don't know, October, November. So we're like 16 games in. He has his baby on a Saturday, can't even coach in the game, and got fired on Sunday, the next day after he had his baby. So, you know, it's a business for them too, obviously. It was crazy, but the owner, Kirk Brooks, is actually a phenomenal guy. I think he paid his salary out the whole year anyways. Like, you know, it was just one of those things where we needed a change, but, so nothing bad on the owner, but, yeah, it was, you know, it's a business for them too.
You know, that's a just a crazy junior experience that you had. But I want to flip forward a little bit more towards, you know, going to college at Penn State. You know, what was the recruiting process like for you to get to Penn State? And I have a couple different questions when it comes to this. One, I think you and Jeff may have a mutual coach in Keith Fisher when it comes to Penn State and Omaha. You guys both played for Fish, right?
Yep.
Yeah, he's my assistant coach now.
Okay, got you. So probably cool. Maybe you guys could have a couple fish stories that would be kind of funny. But also, you know, your brother played at Princeton for Coach Godowski and his staff with Matty Lindsay and Fish. And those guys are now at Penn State. You know, what was that like, your recruiting process of getting to Penn State? And, you know, did your brother's process of going to Princeton's experience there, did that have much to do with the reason why you chose it as well?
Yeah. So for me, it kind of all picked up at once. I didn't really have any offers. I talked to a couple schools. And then I went to nationals my sophomore year, and, my brother's at Princeton at the time. And I played well. And then Princeton offered me at the tournament. And then, which is the first time I've talked to him, but so obviously my brother being there was, a factor, but that's with Godowski and Fisher and Lindsay. And so I think about that. I talked to a few other teams, a lot of ECAC teams, and then a couple others. And then I go to send my transcripts to Princeton, and something weird happens. And I get a call from, I think his name's Gardner. I forget his name, but basically like talking to me about being recruited for Princeton. And then I kind of figure out that the entire Princeton coaching staff is now at Penn State. So
you didn't even know that, like, they had left.
I had no, they offered me, and then Godowski, I guess, ended up leaving a couple weeks later when I was still like thinking about it. And so then the new coaching staff was like, "Hey, did you talk to the other staff at all?" And I was like, I mean, I guess, yeah, they kind of offered me, but like, I don't know. They're like, we'll honor their commitment. I'm like, no, I don't, you don't have to do that. So anyways, but then they ended up offering me like, I don't know, a couple months later. So I really thought about Princeton. I kind of narrowed it down from the ECAC schools. I figured if I was going to go ECAC, I was going to go to Princeton. I went and visited Princeton with my brother. It was awesome. I really liked it, but obviously Penn State had offered me as well. And I kind of sat down with my parents like my junior year, and we kind of talked about the whole thing. And I just thought that, you know, Penn State was the right fit for me.
What was it about Penn State that did it for you?
I just think that Penn State offers everything. Like, you know, we have an unbelievable atmosphere, like for hockey, obviously. We've got a great coaching staff, which my brother gave me a really good recommendation on the staff. So that was a big part of it. But, you know, we have the facilities. We have a good school educational-wise. Obviously there's 40,000 people here. It's pretty fun. You know, you got the football team, you just kind of got everything here. It's not like, you know, you got to pick. Nothing against those other schools. It's just for me, you know, I kind of wanted to balance my life out where it's not either all school or all hockey or this and that. I kind of wanted it all. And I thought Penn State was the best opportunity for that.
That's really cool. When you went on your visit there, did it just like click? Because I went on a couple visits when I was playing in the USHL, and the first couple schools, I was like, and I went to Western, and like immediately just everything, like the guys there, the coaches, the locker, like just everything about it, it just clicked. And I was like, this is where I should be. Was it like that for you, or no? Was you were just like, oh, I like everything.
So mine is kind of weird, actually. I never visited before I committed. Like, because they didn't have their rink built. Like, I was a junior, so they couldn't pay for me to go. So I was like, I don't think I need to see anything. Because I remember Joe Lordo and David Goodwin's committed there at the time. Like,
yep.
I had unbelievable reviews from them. And I kind of just did a little bit of homework, and I knew the place was going to be really nice and all that. So I didn't think I needed to see it. But to your point, Jeff, my little brother, was talking to a good amount of schools, and he came and visited here, and his story was kind of similar to yours, where he loved the guys. He loved everything about it, and everything just clicked. And he called me like a day after. He's like, I'm going to accept the offer. I'm like, well, give it a week at least, man. Like, I don't want you to make an impulse here. And and he waited literally a week and was like, I'm coming.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm such a nerd. I was on my trip, and I think it was probably like a 2.5 day trip. And at the end of the first day, we were like walking through, it's called like the bookstore, and that's how you get clothes and stuff there. And I bought a hoodie, and I shouldn't have showed my hand. Cause like, I remember going to meet the coach that night for dinner, and the assistant coach, Chris Brooks, who Tove played for, was like, hey Jim, Jeff bought a hoodie today. And they kind of looked at each other and laughed. And I was like, damn it. I just lost my leverage. But
that's so funny. We had a kid when I was coaching at Cornell that bought like a red and white scarf, and it was actually the second visit that he was coming down, bought the red and white scarf, and like, you know, coming, he brought like a ton of people from his family there and all this kind of stuff, and he hadn't committed to us at the time. And it was crazy because we're like, oh, like we think we're gonna get this kid, and like a week later he committed to Harvard, and we were like dumbfounded. We were like, what? So we were kind of given like the whole wink, like, yeah, I think we're gonna get, nope, he went to Harvard, ended up being a really good player there. So you fooled him, or we got fooled. Anyway. But Chase, I wanted to ask you too, because we talk a lot on this podcast about kind of like going when you're ready to specific, you know, levels of hockey. And we talk about, you know, not rushing the process. You know, everybody is so quick to want to play junior hockey, play college hockey, play pro hockey. And, you know, there's very, very few people that really can do that at such a young age. You know, you were definitely the kind of guy that, you know, went when you were ready, in terms of you played 2 or 3 years of U18 hockey in St. Louis. Then you played 2 years at Tri-City. Now you're all 4 years at Penn State. You're a senior this year, and you know, hopefully you can embark upon a long pro career after this. You've certainly put yourself in that position. So, like, kind of as you move from level to level, was that something that you ever thought about? Did you ever have the chance to kind of leave earlier? Like, talk to us a little bit about how you went through the process of getting from level to level.
Yeah. No, obviously I think my parents have a lot to do with it, but I had the opportunity to leave my senior year to go play for Tri-City. And I really thought about it. But I think for me, you know, obviously education, I think is incredibly important for everybody. And I really liked the high school that I went to, a lot of great friends there, and I wanted to graduate from there. So that was, you know, a big part of my decision. And also, you know, I wanted to step in and play right away. And I was told I'd have that opportunity, in USHL, but you know, now looking back, you never know. I could have got cut 2 weeks in. So yeah, I was really happy I stayed. And then as far as the Penn State, waiting in USHL, I knew it was going to take a little bit for them to get really competitive. So I was completely fine with staying. Maybe I was an age out my last year, which was good and bad in its own sense. But then obviously coming here, like there's no part of me that wanted to leave here after 3 years. I think that, you know, I love the college atmosphere. I love the guys on our team. And I know that there's so many good hockey players out there. Like, I don't think people understand that. Like, I know some really good college players that, you know, I look at where they are now. I'm like, how is this guy not like in the NHL, and he's in the East Coast League? Like, there's just so many good players that, I really didn't want to, not have an education and, you know, not have a plan B kind of going forward. And I also think that, you know, hockey wise, it's helped me where I came in as a little bit more mature than maybe some other freshmen. So I kind of, you know, I took school a little bit more seriously. I, you know, handled myself off the ice a little bit more responsibly, I suppose. And then also, you know, I was usually the youngest guy on my team growing up. And then obviously towards the end of my career, I was kind of always the oldest. So kind of got to see both sides. And I think I got a little bit of maturity from that. And so I think coming in my freshman year, I had a lot of insights that maybe an 18-year-old might not have. And I think it's helped me kind of, you know, be able to get in the lineup and, you know, try and help my team as much as I can.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I always felt like playing 2 years a junior was the best way to go because, you know, when you play 2 years, you're learning how to be a follower your first year, and then you're learning how to be a leader the next year. And I think both of those kind of lessons are really, really important in your development, both as a hockey player and, you know, obviously as a human being as well. Would you think that, like, in your kind of career, both in juniors and in college, you kind of learned how to be both? And maybe who are some of the guys that you looked up to as mentors, as teammates, you know, as you kind of went through your junior and college journeys?
I think that's incredibly important, Toph. Like, I think there's so many guys that come in and they just want to be a leader right away. And I do not think that's the way to get respect from your teammates. Like, I think, you know, just keep your mouth shut and any ears open kind of motto, at least for the start. And so for me, like, I probably said four words my first 2 years here. But a guy like David Glenn, he was my captain my first year at Penn State. Honestly, we have a really good culture here. I think there's a guy, Curtis Loik, who I think he played in the BC. Yep. He's done playing now, but
remember watching him play out in BC?
So this kid was maybe the best teammate I've ever had. My freshman year, he was a senior, and he would just, he'd get out and he'd work so hard every single day. And then actually I was his line mate and I ended up taking a spot on the power play my freshman year, which, by the way, I shouldn't have been on. This kid was better than me, but this guy was, he was so happy for me. Like, gives me tips after every practice. Like, hey, this is how you can be good in this spot. Like, I'm taking this guy's spot his senior year. I'm a freshman. And he was so positive about it. He just wanted the team to win. And guys like that kind of showed me the way to, like, you know, it's all about the team no matter what, like, and nobody cares about how many goals you have or, you know, how many points you get, whatever, if your teammates don't like you. Like, it's just, it's kind of irrelevant and it's no fun. So I think those are two of the guys for me that kind of showed me how to be a great teammate, and kind of just embrace the team environment and your teammates.
I love that, Bergs. I love that you said that because people always ask me, they're like, are you going to get into coaching? Like, I think you'd be a good coach. Like, will you do that? And I'm like, you know, like, talking about professionally, coaching professionally. And for me, like, looking back on everywhere I played and all the years, like, junior hockey and college hockey were by far my favorite years of my hockey career. You will never, when you turn pro, like, yes, you're trying to make the team win and all that stuff, but, like, it's about you. At the end of the day, that's how you put food on your table. That's how you make money. And it's way more selfish. And even though on the ice, it's, guys aren't really thinking that way, but off the ice, they are. Like, you have to protect yourself because no one cares about your career more than yourself. But college hockey and junior hockey it's FTB. It's for the boys. It's all about the boys, all about the team, all about the camaraderie. Everybody's there to help the team win. You know, it's just, it's a different atmosphere and it's so uplifting and encouraging. And, you know, the last 10 years of my life, well, not 10, like once I went to Europe, that's when I had to start thinking more selfishly because you're on 1 year contracts. And it's definitely, like, it's stressful. And I felt like I was, you know, not being in the NHL, you're not being set for life, you know? So you got to grind and you got to put up numbers and you kind of have to think a little more selfishly. And I feel like I was not as good of a person the last few years over in Europe because I had to think that way. So to hear you talk about a guy who you're taking his spot, he's a leader and he's out there teaching you how to take his spot. Like, that's what hockey is all about. I absolutely love it. I feel like you should say that guy's name again. And let's pump his tires because, like, what a beauty.
Curtis Loik. He is an absolute beauty. I love this man.
Loiky, I don't know you, but I love you.
That's cool, man. Well, I wanted to ask you more kind of about some of the things that were going on at Penn State because, I mean, the story is unbelievable. You know, you guys were a club program less than a decade ago, and then, you know, you guys have won a Big Ten championship already, and that is incredible. What would you attribute that to? You know, I don't even want to call it a turnaround, but, like, just the start of the Division I program, and you guys have had so much success already. You know, why do you think that you guys have been able to do that in such a quick amount of time?
Well, I think a lot of credit goes to our coaching staff. Our coach, all of our coaches are really big believers in culture. And so they try to recruit kind of the guys that maybe not always the best players, but guys that, you know, work extremely hard. They're humble, they're good teammates. And they show up and they don't take anything for granted. I think that's something that we do very well is, you know, we never get cocky. We never think we're too good for an opponent. Like, we kind of respect everybody. And, but at the same time, also kind of like a quiet confidence too, like, hey, we belong here. We, you know, we're not going to back down either. So our coach is pretty adamant about that. It's, you know, we're all about culture. So he just brought in a lot of really good guys that want to do whatever it takes to win for the team. So I know, especially when we won that Big Ten championship, like, we were not the most skilled team, by any means. I think now we've kind of elevated our skill a lot. So we're kind of, you know, maybe a little bit more qualified to win, but especially that year, it's like, you know, we won because we had fourth line guys that didn't care about getting points at all. They'd step over the red line, rip one on net so they could get an ozone face off. And then they'd get off the ice after 5 seconds and put the scoring line out. So it was, you know, we just had a lot of selfless players. And I think the reason that we've continued to do good now is because I think we've kind of kept that mentality of it's about the team. You know, we're not going to be arrogant. We're not going to get selfish. Like, we are going to play for the team and do what it takes. But also now we've added a lot more skill and some really high quality players.
Oh, I miss those days, man. It's so fun when you have a team all, like, literally everyone is on the same page. And there's two things that I want to talk about right there with what you just said. One, I love that play. I love when you know, obviously in older hockey, I'm not talking about minor hockey. I love when a third, fourth line guy puts it on net and sprints at the net so the goalie has to freeze it, and then you can get your first line out there. I remember when I was younger, I used to always, like, if I had nothing, like a one-on-two or whatever, I'd throw it in the goalie's chest and try and sprint in there and stop, because in my head, I'm like, all right, we got an ozone face-off. But some coaches are like, you're giving the goalie confidence and this and that. I'm like, I flipped it on net. Now we're in zone. We're starting off in zone. So maybe now if you do that three times a game, maybe you've got two extra minutes in the offensive zone just off the face off, one in the draw and stuff like that. So that's such a smart play, I think. I mean, what do I know? But, you know, I think a lot. But the second thing is, I like
20 bucks.
Yeah, 20 bucks. I know. I'm probably at 40 this episode if we're being serious. But anyways, I know that you and I have talked over this summer when I was training you about kind of your coach's philosophies. And one thing that was super interesting to me when I was watching your game tapes was that you weren't finishing every check. And I want you to talk to me about kind of your team's philosophy, because I personally had never heard this and I thought it was super interesting. So why aren't you guys finishing all your checks?
So yeah, our coach kind of does a couple things a little differently, but one thing that we really stress is like opportunities on power plays. So we don't want to give up a lot of power plays. Like, that's one of our emphasis, is like, we want to win the ops battle. So the biggest thing that he sees with that is, you know, you go up, try to finish a check high, like, you get a penalty in today's game. Like, any big hit really is, you know, going to be looked at for a penalty. And he's all about stick pressure. So, like, I remember when I was in junior, it used to be like, F1, you take the body, that's your role. Well, we don't do that. It's, hey, our forecheck is get the puck. That's literally what our forecheck is. So, he talks about, you know, just having a great stick. Like, why go finish the hit when you can just get stick on puck, knock the puck loose, and somebody could go make a play. Like, so we're all about, you know, having a great stick, and not putting yourself out of position or getting your hands up and your stick off the ice in order to hit a guy when it might be a penalty anyways. He would say that the best play is, hey, just knock the puck loose and then get it free for another guy. If you want to finish the hit after that, great. But I honestly have never heard him be like, hey, great hit. Like, I don't think he really cares about that at all. But, you know, if you blow a guy up and the puck goes to the other team, he's mad. But if you don't touch the guy at all and poke the puck off his stick, you know, that's a great play. So that's kind of our philosophy on that.
So cool. I mean, I love Toph and I both. We love outside the box thinkers. And that's obviously a way different way to see the game that has been played for the last 15, 20, 30 years. That's a very interesting, Toph. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I think it's great. And just to kind of go along with what you're saying, Chase, is, you know, when I first got to Cornell, again, our identity was always like the big, tough, physical team. That's kind of how we were built and how we would always play. And my first couple of years back, you know, we were in the box all game. Like, we had to kill so many penalties. So we went a little bit more towards kind of like what Guy's doing in terms of talking more about angling, talking more about stick pressure, talking more about back pressure. And instead of, you know, finishing every check, you know, even if you're, you know, a couple strides away from the guy, you know, rather than go level the guy, it's stop, get back through the middle hard with your stick on the ice. And as you were kind of talking, I was looking at the stats right now, and, you know, Penn State is number 13 in the country in terms of, you know, the least amount of penalty minutes per game. So that certainly makes sense. But Cornell is fourth in the country of least penalty minutes per game, which if there was any Cornell fans or any of the Cornell guys that I played with that is listening to this, that heard that stat, they'd probably fall over on their chair with a heart attack because that's not how kind of we remember what Cornell hockey is. But, you know, I do think that that's the way that the game is changing. You know, you guys have obviously had a ton of success with it too. So it must be a lot of fun to play that way.
Yeah, it's a ton of fun. Our coaches, you know, they are kind of outside the box thinkers. We've got a few things we do that I think maybe some other coaches would kind of frown on, but you know, if we're all doing them, you know, like that stuff, I think it works.
I think it just goes to show, honestly, and I've talked about this with like other guys in the business, and you know, I'd love to hear what you guys think about it too. But like, teams can win in any system. Honestly, systems, do they really matter? I mean, systems in the sense of like everybody buying into the system, that's what matters. You know, teams have won on different forechecks and different power plays and different penalty kills and different D zones, and like every system has won a championship. It's how much buy-in a team has. Like, I'd rather have a not so good system but everybody buy into it than to have like the best system in the world but everybody isn't sure of what it is, or nobody, you know, I wouldn't say everybody believes in it. So it's just, it's interesting. What would you guys think about that?
Go ahead, Burks.
I couldn't agree more. I remember Josh Howji, who we talked about earlier, he said that exact same thing. He's like, hey, our system doesn't matter. What matters is everyone doing it. And I know that's true for us as well. Like, we're a team that loves shooting pucks. Like, we don't care about possession time at all. So if we're shooting a ton of pucks, we need guys going in that all the time. And when we have everybody doing that, we're really effective. When we have 18 out of 20, we're terrible. So I couldn't agree more.
That's so smart. I remember watching your game tapes this summer, and that totally makes sense. And what is a system anyways? What is structure? The reason for it is so that all five guys on the ice kind of know where the other guys are going to be during a specific play, or, you know, this is happening, so I know I need to be here, and I know the other four guys are going to be in their spot. So when you're steering a guy to wherever, you know you're steering him into your teammate because you're all doing the same system. So I tell 100%, if everyone buys in, I don't care if it's the worst quote-unquote system, if everyone's on the same page, that's what matters most. Bergs, I would have loved playing for your coach with the everyone shoot the puck, because I literally tried to shoot the puck from everywhere, because I don't think we've talked about this yet, Toph, is somebody, you know, it was grandpa. It was our grandpa. He said to me, like, look at who has the most shots every year and look at who has the most goals and points. And if you go to any league, and I've done this, you go to any league, look at who has the most shots and then look at it has the most points. And it almost always correlates, almost always. So I was like, God, that's just simple math. The more you shoot, the more you're going to get assists from rebounds, the more you're going to score greasy goals, whatever. So I literally just tried to shoot it from everywhere. And I told my teammates, hey, if I get the puck, you better go to the net, because A, my vision sucks, and B, I'm just going to shoot it as hard as I can. You'll get a rebound. Let's score a greasy goal here.
I love that. And that's actually one of like the biggest debates going on in hockey right now, is the like the shot quantity versus shot quality. You know, you find people that get heated about this debate in terms of, you know, the one side get as many shots as possible, and then there's the other side get the right shots from the right spots and stuff like that. So there's a lot of like, that's a huge analytics debate that's going on right now, and it's really, really cool. But yeah, going against Coach Godowski, like, it was a different pre-scout every time that you were playing against them. Because for the most part, like, you know, when you're doing a pre-scout against teams in college, typically everybody has pretty similar systems and stuff like that, but whenever you're going against him, it was just, you know, throw that out and you got to like completely prepare your team in a different way. So, but that's got to be kind of cool, Chase, like, you know, playing a different way and learning a different style. Do you feel like you've kind of grown as a player and learned a lot about the game from doing that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, to Jeff's point, we lead the nation in goals and we have the most shots as well. So he's right on that. But
it's almost like I know what I'm talking about, Bergs. It's almost like I know what I'm talking about. It's weird.
Let's not get crazy here. Yeah, I've learned, you know, a bunch of stuff about the games that I've been here. I think kind of to what we were saying as well, like we're not so much structure. Our coaches, he really gives us the freedom he calls it play with passion and instinct. So he doesn't want to put us in a box. He wants us to, you know, he recruits smart hockey players, so he wants us to be able to use our smarts. He's not one of those ego guys where you need to do what I want to do. But I've learned like changing on the back check. We love that. He's like, if you're tired, get off the ice. Like no reason to try to show you're a hero and get into the D zone and then you're dog tired and we get scored on. Or shooting for the empty net. Like we're all about it. Even if you ice it, like whatever, like if you got a chance to ice the game, take the shot. Like if you have a shot, take it, no matter what. Off the power play, every face-off win, we shoot it or it's a pass and a shot. Like there's no like, hey, let's set up and get possession here. Like we do some, and I think a lot of teams maybe are adjusting to that, but you know, coming in, like those are things that I would think like I'm never changed on the back check. But you know, he, like we talked about, he kind of thinks it differently and he doesn't go by the old like, this is how you're supposed to do it. You know, he's big into analytics as well. And so we kind of look at all that stuff and he's got some different things that he likes. And I think it's a great system to play in because he loves us scoring goals. Like we'll be up, you know, 3-2 going into the third. And he's like, let's put 7 up on these guys. It's like, gee, all right. Like we're just going to keep trying to score. Like we're always trying to score goals. Like he's never like, let's lock it down, play great D. Like, he wants us to do it the right way, like getting pucks behind the D and whatnot. But he is never like, hey, let's just try to grind them out 2-1. It's like, we're going to try to score 100 goals here.
That sounds like so much fun. And I love those couple things you just said, because they are different than the mainstream old school way of thinking. And I got to ask you like how intense he is. Cause I've always thought that too, on the back check, like, especially if you're the if you're the first guy back checking, you know, and you're pressuring the puck, obviously you're not going to change when it's a 3-on-2 and you're trying to make it a 3-on-3, but you're that second to last guy. You're that last guy. You're dead tired. It makes no sense to go stop in zone. You're dead. And then your brain stops working. You drift all over the zone. You create holes. That's how teams score. But, does he tell you where to be on the bench when you're doing that? Like if you're the next line up, because you guys know you're going to maybe have guys changing on the back check, is the next line up as far down towards your net as possible, or no, is it just, you're just changing?
No, we always change out the middle here. So like, no matter what, like, I guess, so yeah, like if it's the second period and the guy's back checking, he'll go in through the door, like right by the blue line. And the next forwards are all the way kind of by the D, changing out the middle. So we always change out the middle. So they hop the boards and we call it gaining a zone. So like, yeah, you gain a little half of a zone, on the back check there. But you're right too. Like if the play's coming at you, you're not changing. But like if you're way behind and you can't really make a difference on your back check, then he just prefer you get off.
Well, it just makes sense. A fresh guy's jumping out and if you're changing like that, I mean, the difference between the door and being all the way down by the D, that's gotta be like a 12-foot difference. And then you got a guy who's dead tired and a guy who's fresh hopping out there, who's going to sprint. I think that guy's probably going to get back sooner anyways. So I always tell guys, and I told my teammates when I was playing in Europe, none of the teams I played for ever thought of this. I don't know if they never were coached it or what, but I'm like, why would you not want to start on the ice in a better position? Like get closer to the D zone or the offensive zone if it's a power play and you're trying to cheat, whatever. But like think about your changes, because that's like 12-foot difference. 12 feet on the ice at the higher levels with guys' speed, nobody's catching you if you get a 12-foot head start. I don't care who you are.
Yeah, no, I think it's huge.
Yeah.
Thanks, boys. Jump on my bandwagon. I was excited about my insight to changes, and you guys butt clapped me.
I thought it was a very, very good point, Jeffrey.
Thank you.
Well, Chase, you are a busy, busy, busy student athlete, so we want to get you going here shortly, but did want to congratulate you on getting nominated for the Lowe's Senior Class Award. That's an awesome, awesome award, you know, not just of what you're doing on the ice, but what you're doing off the ice, and obviously you're also a captain at Penn State, so you're doing a lot of really good things, so obviously keep that up, and for all the listeners that are listening to this right now, you know, type in Lowe's Senior Class Award on Google. There is a fan voting portion of it. So encourage you to kind of go there and vote for Chase as much as you can. He certainly deserves it. Has had an unbelievable career at Penn State. But, you know, before we let you go, you know, you started working out with my cousin Jeffrey here, who is shirtless as we talk, as he is every time. What's it been like kind of working out with him during the summers, and how has he pushed you kind of to become a better hockey player in person?
It is a riot showing up to the gym every day. Yeah, you're right. Never a shirt on. honestly, we got a good little workout group. And so it's just a lot of fun. He creates a really good environment in the gym, and you're always thinking about, you know, what your goals are and how what you're doing is going to help you achieve them, which I liked. And then I also think he doesn't look it, but he's pretty smart about, you know, everything I hear from the next level is all about, you know, mobility and, you know, all this stuff. That's not the usual, like, let's put 400 pounds on your back and just go nuts. He's really intuitive as far as, you know, being up to date with, you know, the best way to train athletes. And he's got some pretty funny stories that make me smile. So, it makes it better.
Can any of those stories be told on this podcast or no?
No, none of them. None of them. But I'll tell you this. Thanks for the nice words, Bergs. But I just want to go back to that Lowe's Senior Class Award. I didn't know that you could vote on it, so I will now be voting on that. But, you know, this kid right here who you guys are listening to, he's a captain of Penn State. He's been a captain in the past. He's a good person. Like, if you're going to vote for anyone in that, like, no doubt, throw some votes Berger's way. Like, you know, I never lie. I never speak out of turn. This is somebody who deserves to win an award like this as a player and as a person. He's 100% dedicated to hockey. And if there's any hockey moms out there, check this guy's picture out. He looks like a human Ken doll. So you, if you're going off looks, I think he's going to win also.
Wow, Jeff, you're going to make me cry.
That's what we call him, Tope. We call him the human Ken doll. Like, seriously, this guy literally looks like he was made by Mattel.
So if you have that kind of nickname for him, Bergs, do you have do you guys in your group have a nickname for Jeff as well?
Not really. I mean, he kind of makes all the nicknames.
I think you need one now. You guys are going to have to get a group chat going and start thinking of something.
Yeah, I really do. Now I'm kind of embarrassed. So I'll think of something else, and we'll start ripping on Jeff a little bit more. It sounds like his ego is pretty high.
Yeah. Knock me down a peg, boys. I love it. Feed off it.
Well, man. Well, Chase, this was awesome, man. We so appreciate your insight. And, you know, there's a lot of kids out there that listen to this podcast that have dreams of playing college hockey, specifically, you know, as a school of the stature like Penn State. And you're doing awesome things. Your team, again, is in the hunt for another Big Ten and national championship. So, you know, we wish you nothing but the best of luck down the playoff and stretch drive here. And, you know, keep the good work going, and hopefully after the end of the year you can maybe make a little bit of money playing this game as well.
Yeah, buddy.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me. It's fun.
All right, awesome. Thanks a lot, Chase. Take care, man.
Thanks, Bruce.
See you guys.